Our episodes deal with serious and often distressing incidents. If you feel at any time you need support, please contact your local crisis centre. For suggested phone numbers for confidential support and for a more detailed list of content warnings, please see the show notes for this episode on your app or on our website. This episode was originally released on Case Files Patreon, Apple Premium and Spotify Premium feeds as an early bonus for our paid subscribers. To receive these episodes early and ad-free, you can support Case File on your preferred platform. At approximately 7:40 p.m. on Sunday, April 19, 2015, 911 dispatchers in New York State received a phone call from a distressed-sounding woman. Strong winds and rolling waves could be heard in the background as the woman immediately explained, "I'm in the Hudson River by the Cornwall Yacht Club. My fiancé fell in the water. Can you please call anybody?" The caller identified herself as Angelica. She said that she and her fiancé Vincent had been kayaking back from Bannerman's Island, also known as Polypel Island, about 50 miles north of New York City, when Vincent's kayak capsized. He'd become separated from it and the current was pulling him south while the waves pushed Angelica in her kayak north. "I can't get to him," Angelica said. "It's very windy and the waves are coming in. I can't paddle to him. He's getting further and further away from me. He's going to drown. Please call somebody." The dispatcher urged Angelica to stay calm, reassuring her that help was on the way. Angelica said she could still see Vincent's head above the water, but warned that it was getting very bad as the distance between them grew. She revealed that Vincent wasn't wearing a life jacket, but was clinging to a small buoyant cushion from his kayak. "Hold on, baby," she shouted to him. As time wore on, Angelica's panic escalated. She suddenly screamed, "Oh my God, I can't see him anymore." Angelica said she could see a rescue boat approaching, but found little comfort in its arrival. "I'm not worried about myself," she told the dispatcher. "I'm worried about Vince. I think he drowned. I need him to be rescued." Then, without warning, the harrowing 15-minute call abruptly cut off. A civilian rescue boat from the Cornwall Yacht Club raced toward the unfolding emergency on the Hudson River. By this point, the sun had almost set and the wind was picking up as a storm approached. Chilled by recent mountain snowmelt, the Hudson was a brisk 46 degrees Fahrenheit, or just under 8 degrees Celsius. Its surface was choppy, with swells reaching 3 to 4 feet high. As the rescuers navigated the treacherous conditions, they wondered why anyone in their right mind would have chosen to go kayaking that evening. They soon spotted 35-year-old Angelica Graswold struggling in the rough, frigid waters. She was bolstered by a life jacket while her red kayak drifted nearby, overturned in the waves. The rescuers pulled Angelica to safety, but couldn't see anyone else in the river. Once ashore, the cold and distressed Angelica was rushed to the hospital where she was treated for hypothermia, a life-threatening condition caused by exposure to cold temperatures resulting in the body losing heat faster than it can produce it. Though visibly shaken and in shock, Angelica was able to tell the police about the events that had taken place that day. Kayaking on the Hudson was a springtime tradition for herself and her 46-year-old fiancé, Vincent Villafour. It was their mutual love for outdoor adventure that had partly drawn the pair together in the first place. Vincent, known to his friends as Vince or Vinny, grew up by the Hudson River and had a deep love for all things water-related, be it fishing, swimming, or water sports. Vincent had taken up kayaking with his first wife, a hobby they'd enjoyed together until their amicable split. His passion for the sport remained, and he continued to hone his skills over the years, with the Hudson River becoming one of his favourite places to paddle. Angelica had grown up in Latvia, where her childhood was defined by camping, volleyball, swimming, and fishing. Like Vincent, she was a seasoned kayaker, and the two hit the water so frequently that they kept their kayaks in their living room. Angelica told the police that she and Vincent were nursing hangovers that Sunday, but the unseasonably warm weather convinced them to squeeze in their first kayaking trip of the season. While they knew a storm was forecast for later that night, they fully intended to finish their outing before then. Their plan was to kayak to Bannerman's Island, which was named after the ruins of an abandoned military surplus warehouse built there in 1901. The uninhabited island, which was roughly 1,000 feet from the river's eastern shore, was only accessible by boat and off-limits to visitors outside scheduled tours due to the fragile and hazardous condition of the ruins. However, Angelica was intimately familiar with the area. For the past 3 years, she had volunteered as a gardener with the island's preservation society. She tended to the island every Wednesday and had formed close friendships with its caretakers. She adored its natural beauty and rich, ornate history. Its crown jewel, the remnants of the Scottish-inspired Bannerman's Castle, reminded her of the architecture in Latvia. Despite the restrictions on visiting the island, Angelica and Vincent ventured out there anyway. Angelica said she showered as Vincent packed their car with their kayaks, two 8'6" Clearwater Affinities. Both were Fusion 124 models, hers red, his blue. Angelica's kayak was stored inside the vehicle while Vincent's was strapped to the roof. They set off from their apartment in the riverside city of Poughkeepsie and drove 30 minutes south to their destination, stopping at a fast food restaurant for a quick bite along the way. It was a little after 4 p.m. when the couple launched their kayaks from Plum Point Park, located on the eastern shore of the Hudson River. The water was calm, although colder than they anticipated. Angelica took her purse with her cell phone, while Vincent brought a waterproof bag containing a camera and a couple of beers. According to Angelica, neither of them typically wore a life jacket, but this time, Vincent convinced her to wear hers. He didn't own one, so he went without. The journey to Bannerman's Island was expected to take 30 to 45 minutes at a moderate pace. As they paddled, the couple admired the scenic beauty of the Hudson Valley with Breakneck Ridge to the east and Storm King Mountain to the west. Bannerman's Castle, with its lush garden surroundings, provided the perfect backdrop for a photo shoot the couple had planned that day. Angelica was an avid nature photographer, and Vincent shared her love for capturing special moments. They were considering using the island for their upcoming wedding photos. The trip to the island was smooth and uneventful. Once there, they pulled their kayaks ashore and climbed the stairs to explore the castle ruins. They had originally planned a sexy photo shoot featuring Angelica in lingerie, fishnet stockings and heels, but the unexpectedly cold temperature caused them to rethink the idea. Instead, they wandered around, enjoyed their beers, and took candid photos of one another. Their initial plan was to paddle around to the other side of the island, but as the sun began to set, they decided to head back to the mainland instead. By the time they were halfway across the river, the tide had shifted, and the forecasted storm was rolling in. The growing wind and waves made the return trip far more strenuous. Vincent remained upbeat as he paddled ahead of Angelica, navigating the rolling waves with his usual playful spirit. "Baby, this is an adventure of a lifetime," he called out. But Angelica's concerns were mounting. The waves were splashing into the cockpit of Vincent's kayak, causing it to flood and ride lower in the water. His kayak became increasingly unstable and he struggled in the rough conditions. Suddenly, Vincent's kayak flipped, throwing him into the cold, dark water. Angelica watched in horror as he clung to his kayak and its buoyant seat cushion. "Just hold on," Angelica yelled as she grabbed Vincent's wayward paddle from the river and secured it to her own kayak. She tried to paddle toward him, but the gusty wind and choppy waves kept pushing them further apart. Though Vincent was athletic and a strong swimmer, the powerful current and icy water made it difficult for him to stay afloat. "I don't think I am going to make it," he shouted. Unwilling to imagine the alternative, Angelica replied with optimism. "What are you talking about? You're going to make it, of course." Vincent watched on as Angelica fought a losing battle to reach him. Soon, he lost contact with his sinking kayak and was left clinging only to the small seat cushion. Realizing the gravity of the situation, he yelled at Angelica to call 911. While Angelica was speaking to the operator, she too was thrown into the water, losing her cell phone into its icy depth as she went. Her life jacket kept her afloat, but she had lost sight of Vincent entirely. The police sympathized with Angelica as the search for her fiancé intensified. While she expressed hope that Vincent might still be alive, the authorities weren't as certain. In addition to not wearing a life jacket, Vincent hadn't been dressed in appropriate outerwear, such as a dry or wetsuit, to help him endure the cold river. The temperature of the water that evening was low enough to trigger a cold shock response, a sudden and involuntary reaction that would have caused Vincent to lose control of his breathing. Exacerbated by panic, he would have begun hyperventilating, taking rapid, shallow breaths and exhaling more air than he inhaled. This would have left him feeling dizzy, lightheaded, and short of breath, while making him weak and confused. Within minutes of being in the water, Vincent's body temperature would have dropped below 95 degrees Fahrenheit or 35 degrees Celsius, putting him at risk of hypothermia. As his core temperature plummeted, Vincent's heart, nervous system, and other organs would have functioned less efficiently. Even if Vincent had been trained in self-rescue techniques, or if Angelica had been able to assist him, the situation would have been incredibly difficult to manage. Once Vincent was separated from his kayak, reuniting with it would have been almost impossible. As the owner of a Hudson River kayaking company explained, "Whatever is in the water is going to go with the current, and whatever is on the water will go with the wind." In other words, the current would have dragged Vincent in one direction, while the wind pushed his kayak in another. As hypothermia set in, numbing Vincent's extremities and slowing his movements, he would have become sluggish, drowsy, and lethargic. Save for a miracle, it was highly likely that Vincent Villafor had drowned. By daybreak on Monday, April 20, approximately 12 hours had passed since the accident, and there was still no sign of Vincent in the Hudson River. In what would become the worst phone call of her life, Vincent's mother, Mary Ann, received the devastating news of her son's disappearance. Vincent's absence was immediately felt by his loved ones. As the life of the party, Vincent was the center of attention with his fun-loving, big-hearted personality. He was quick to help others and always made people smile, with one friend remarking, "You couldn't find anyone who would say a bad word about Vincent." Vincent's friendly, carefree disposition had earned him a large group of lifelong friends whom he saw most weekends at one of the many bars along Poughkeepsie's Main Street. There, he entertained onlookers with his dancing, karaoke, and billiard skills. It was at one of these bars in September 2013 that he had first met Angelica Graswold. Angelica had arrived in the United States 13 years prior at the age of 20, seeking travel and new experiences. She initially took up work as a nanny, but caring for three young children proved overwhelming and she quit after 6 months. What was only supposed to be a one-year visit turned into an indefinite stay as Angelica grew enamored with America and became a permanent resident. Over the next decade, she worked various jobs, studied and dated, until she met Vincent Villafour. According to those who witnessed their romance, it was love at first sight. The couple seemed like a perfect match. In addition to their shared love of the outdoors, Vincent and Angelica were both outgoing and enjoyed a vibrant social life. They had both been married twice before, and neither had children. After dating for 3 weeks, Angelica moved into Vincent's Poughkeepsie rental apartment. She quit her job as a bartender to focus on her photography and to volunteer on Bannerman's Island. 5 months later, Vincent proposed to her with an onion ring from a hibachi grill. Despite the whirlwind pace of their relationship, Vincent's friends could see that he was seriously committed to Angelica. For the first time in his life, he spoke about wanting children. He was also learning Angelica's native language and even travelled to Latvia to meet her family. Upon greeting Angelica's mother, Vincent said, "Hi, Mum," before embracing her warmly. Angelica's family adored Vincent immediately, telling her, "He's one of ours." During this time, Vincent posted a photo online of him and Angelica kissing on a balcony at sunset with the caption, "The wedding's going to be in Europe on the Baltic Sea, but we plan to do a Hudson River cruise party with whatever friends want to party with us." The couple were rarely apart. On Saturday, April 18, 2015, the evening before their fateful kayaking trip, Vincent and Angelica went out drinking with friends. As the night wore on, Vincent wanted to keep partying, but Angelica, who had grown quiet and withdrawn, suggested they call it a night and head home. Vincent eventually agreed. Before they left, he looked out over the Hudson River and casually remarked to one of his friends that he wanted to go kayaking. "What? Are you crazy?" his friend replied, knowing the river was choppy and cold. His friend cautioned, "You can't go in the water, don't even think about it." But Vincent, ever the free spirit and adventurer, couldn't be talked out of anything. Case File will be back shortly. Thank you for supporting us by listening to this episode's sponsors. Thank you for listening to this episode's ads. By supporting our sponsors, you support Case File to continue to deliver quality content. When news of Vincent Villafour's disappearance spread, his family and friends rushed to the shoreline near Bannerman's Island to join the search efforts. Adverse weather hampered their progress, and the search had to be periodically suspended, awaiting better conditions. Meanwhile, members of the local community were stunned to learn that experienced kayakers had ventured out on the Hudson River at such a time. One local kayaker told reporters that it was far too early in the season and too cold for such an excursion, while a spokesperson for the Bannerman Castle Trust made it clear that Angelica and Vincent should never have been on the island alone. Others criticised Vincent for failing to take proper safety precautions. One kayaking expert told the New York Times, "Any experienced paddler wears a personal flotation device all the time, every time, period. You would never see a professional paddler without it, whether you're on a pond or in the Mediterranean. It's a big deal." Some believed the tragedy could have been avoided if Vincent had donned a spray skirt, a flexible waterproof cover that seals around the kayaker's waist and over the cockpit, preventing water from entering the vessel. When the couple's kayaks were recovered from the waters near Plum Point Park, the models they were using were determined to be ill-suited for the choppy conditions and long distances of the Hudson River. Theirs were only 8'6", while longer touring kayaks ranging from 13 to 15 feet were typically used in the area as they offered a better buoyancy and stability. Vincent and Angelica's white water kayaks provided little to no additional flotation, making them better suited for calmer lakes or ponds. Over the coming days, authorities scoured the rocky, sandy shorelines and grey depths of the river for Vincent Villafor. They urged fishermen and other water users to keep an eye out for his body, which could have been carried by the current anywhere along a 150-mile stretch. The police utilised their scuba, canine and aviation units, but no trace of Vincent was found. His loved ones, accepting that he was likely deceased, could do little but hope that his body would be recovered so they could give him a proper farewell. Angelica posted pictures of herself and Vincent to social media, along with inspirational poetry, expressing her hope that he would be found alive. "Please keep your prayers for Vince. Miracles are possible," she wrote. Days after the incident, Angelica appeared in a televised interview, sobbing into her hands and struggling to find the words as she described the moment Vincent vanished beneath the waves. "I just kept thinking, where is he?" she said solemnly. But while Angelica appeared to be devastated, her behaviour elsewhere was drawing attention for all the wrong reasons. When friends called to check in on Angelica, they noted that she seemed unusually calm. She didn't shed any tears in front of Vincent's distraught family either. When asked about the accident, Angelica coolly replied, "You know, it's a tragic thing. What can I say about it?" Some of Angelica's friends thought that she seemed at peace, as though a heavy burden had been lifted from her shoulders. A memorial night was held for Vincent at a local bar, during which Angelica performed a karaoke version of Hotel California by American rock band The Eagles. Some viewed her performance as a little too happy for someone who had just lost their fiancé. Angelica's heartfelt social media posts about Vincent soon gave way to pictures and videos of herself doing alcoholic shots, smoking cigars, performing cartwheels, smiling in selfies, and even doing yoga by the Hudson River. In a move considered by many as distasteful, she uploaded an old picture of herself kayaking in stormy weather without a life jacket on, with the seemingly sarcastic caption referencing Vincent's ordeal. "If only I could have paddled harder. Damn it." Some interpreted Angelica's behaviour as an attempt to put on a brave face, as she continued to tell friends, "There's still a chance they'll find Vincent. There's still a chance." Others felt Angelica was being markedly insensitive, and they were perplexed by what they viewed as her lack of genuine emotion in response to the tragedy. At one point, Angelica even suggested that investigators suspend the search for Vincent to join her for drinks at a party she was hosting to celebrate Vincent's life. She also missed an appointment with police to discuss the case because she said she was having a good time at an animal sanctuary. They rescheduled for the following day, but Angelica failed to show up for that appointment too, repeating the same excuse. The police had to reiterate the importance of the appointment and stress that it should be a priority before Angelica apologised and arrived to speak with them later that day. The police knew that people coped with the trauma and grief differently, sometimes in ways that didn't entirely make sense. They treated Angelica kindly, apologising profusely for making her relive her painful experience in order to assist their investigation. Angelica told them she understood why they wanted to question her, saying that the incident had occurred under, quote, suspicious circumstances. The police asked what she meant by that. She didn't provide a clear answer and instead steered the conversation in a different direction. Throughout the police interview, Angelica smoked cigarettes, breathed heavily, and repeatedly mentioned that she didn't feel well. At the end, she offered the interviewing detective a $10 Google Play gift card as a thank you for his help. When he explained that he couldn't accept it, she attempted to give him a homemade figurine, which he also declined. On her way out, she was overheard asking a companion if they would go out with her that night for a steak and some wine. Suspicions toward Angelica heightened when a rescuer from the Cornwall Yacht Club stated that they believed she had intentionally flipped her kayak just moments before they arrived. Then there was the matter of the cell phone Angelica had used to call 911 on the night Vincent disappeared. She claimed to have lost it in the water when she capsized, but an eyewitness from the rescue boat reported seeing it in her possession as they headed to shore. Some of Vincent's friends were also dubious about Angelica's version of events. While they acknowledged that Vincent could be a bit of an adrenaline junkie, they also knew that he always took precautions. One friend remarked that Angelica's account, quote, just didn't jibe with me. But there was no clear motive for Angelica wanting Vincent out of the picture, at least not initially. It wasn't until the police spoke with Vincent's sister that they uncovered a startling detail. 6 months before Vincent disappeared, Angelica had become the primary beneficiary of two of his life insurance policies, with a combined total of $550,000. Vincent told his sister that he'd made the change in order to designate Angelica as his domestic partner so she could be added to his health insurance plan. However, after Vincent went missing, Angelica had reportedly talked about what she could do with the money. As police dug further, they discovered that Angelica had a tendency to become violent with Vincent when she was drunk. She had been witnessed slapping him hard across the face multiple times. Vincent never reacted, but just looked at her and remained calm. 2 weeks before the kayaking accident, Vincent texted a friend expressing doubts about his relationship, admitting that he didn't think it was going to work out. The next day, he had a change of heart, saying that Angelica had become so afraid of losing him that they had managed to sort their problems out. While Vincent's long-term position as a project manager with the state of New York paid well, it emerged that he'd been struggling financially and had even declared bankruptcy in 2010. His liabilities far exceeded his assets, with a deficit of more than $26,000. As a result, his Jeep Grand Cherokee Sport utility vehicle and Stingray powerboat had been repossessed. These financial issues seemed to have impacted Vincent's relationship with Angelica. According to friends of the couple, Vincent had postponed their wedding several times. Eventually, he gave Angelica an ultimatum: find a job by the end of the month, or he would kick her out of his apartment. When the search for Vincent Villafor's body reached its ninth fruitless day, investigators contacted Angelica to inform her of their plans to return to Bannerman's Island for a more thorough examination of the site. "Oh good," she replied. "Maybe I'll see you out there." Angelica intended to lay a wreath in the water as a tribute to Vincent. The following morning, three case detectives conducted a search of the island as planned, but found nothing of significance. Angelica arrived at around noon. She greeted the waiting detectives with hugs before they asked her to retrace her steps from the day Vincent vanished. During Angelica's reenactment, the detectives highlighted the inconsistencies they had uncovered in her story, including the conflicting accounts about her dropping her cell phone. In response, Angelica's behaviour grew increasingly erratic. She appeared to lose focus and chain-smoked two cigarettes before clutching her stomach as though in pain and repeatedly asking to use the bathroom. Eventually, she began to cry. "Angelica, something is not right," one of the detectives said. "You are not being honest with us. It's important to tell the truth. We need to know what happened." Angelica agreed, but said that she wasn't ready. She was asked if she would feel more comfortable speaking with the detective alone rather than in front of the group. She agreed, and Detective Donald DeQuarto was selected to speak with her privately. The pair had a near hour-long conversation before Detective DeQuarto regrouped with the other investigators and announced, "You're not going to believe this." According to DeQuarto, when he and Angelica were alone, she sat down and lit another cigarette. DeQuarto firmly told Angelica, "Just tell me what's going on." She replied cryptically, "You know about the plug, right?" Detective DeQuarto had no idea what Angelica was talking about and asked her to tell him more. Angelica responded, "Vincent didn't have the plug in his kayak." She was referring to the drain plug, a small but crucial part located on the top side of the stern above the waterline. Drain plugs are screwed into place and removed on dry land to expel water that's caught inside the kayak by flipping it over. When Vincent's kayak was recovered, the plug was notably missing. Without it, the kayak had an open hole about the size of a nickel on top. While this wouldn't have been a problem during the Karma paddle to Bannerman's Island, the worsening conditions on the return trip could have splashed water into the hole, theoretically sinking the kayak. Detective DeQuarto asked Angelica, "Is that why Vincent's kayak sank?" "Yes," she replied. DeQuarto then asked if Angelica had taken the plug out. "Yes, I think I did," she answered. But that wasn't all. Vincent used a two-piece paddle, which was designed to be taken apart for easier transportation and storage. The rods of the two halves were clipped together and tightened in place with two safety rings, ensuring they stayed securely connected during use. Angelica told Detective DeQuarto that she had removed one of the safety rings from Vincent's paddle, making it less stable and difficult to use effectively. Once again, this was news to Detective DeQuarto. Angelica had managed to recover Vincent's paddle during their ordeal and had clipped it to her own kayak. When her kayak was retrieved from the river, investigators hadn't been aware of the safety rings and therefore hadn't noticed if one was missing from Vincent's paddle at the time. Detective DeQuarto asked Angelica, "Did you take the plug out and remove the ring from the paddle because you wanted Vincent dead?" She responded bluntly, "Yes, I guess I did. De Quarto continued. Was there a point you could have helped Vincent or saved him, but you didn't? Yes, she answered. Angelica divulged that Vincent had been clinging to his paddle in the water to help keep himself afloat, and she had taken it away from him. So you didn't help him, De Quarto clarified. No, Angelica confirmed. I wanted him gone. I wanted to be free. I wanted to be myself. When Detective De Quarto recounted Angelica's confession to his team on Bannerman's Island, they were shocked. Unprepared for this turn of events, they hadn't bought any recording devices or pens and paper to document her statement. Regardless, their investigation promptly shifted to a murder inquiry. Angelica willingly got on a police boat to be taken to the New York State Police Barracks for a formal interview. It seemed she didn't fully grasp the gravity of the situation. During the boat trip, Angelica appeared completely unbothered, enjoying the wind, smiling, and even whistling. The detectives exchanged puzzled looks when she suddenly threw up her hands and announced, "I'm free." Angelica's carefree attitude remained when she arrived at the police barracks at around 3:30 p.m., casually telling Detective De Quarto, "When I first saw you, I thought you were cute." Unsure of how to respond to the inappropriate remark, De Quarto simply said, "Thank you." He then proceeded to read Angelica her Miranda rights, which she said she understood. Given that Detective De Quarto had no proof of Angelica's earlier confession on Bannerman's Island, he initiated the formal interview hoping she would repeat her claims while being recorded. "So, we had a good discussion up there," De Quarto began. "We did," Angelica agreed. "I think you feel a lot better." "Yeah, I do, thanks," Angelica confirmed, rubbing her hands together. De Quarto continued. "I know you probably don't want to run through it again, but this is what we have to do." "I understand," Angelica replied. "It's therapy for you," De Quarto assured Angelica. "You'll feel better." At ease, Angelica opened up about her relationship with Vincent. She confessed that she felt trapped because he made frequent sexual demands that left her feeling uncomfortable. She said Vincent wanted to have threesomes, watch pornography together, engage in a dominant-submissive dynamic, and have Angelica pose for racy photographs. If she refused to entertain his requests, he would postpone their wedding or threaten to call it off entirely. While this angered Angelica, she said she stayed with Vincent because she was, quote, a very spiritual person and knew he would never really be gone. Angelica admitted that there had been tension between her and Vincent the night before their kayaking trip. While out drinking with friends, she said they began arguing because Vincent wanted to visit a strip club while Angelica just wanted to go home. She also thought he was too inebriated to drive. Angelica told the police that they made up before going to bed that night, and it was Vincent who insisted on going kayaking the next morning. It was also his idea to do the sexy photo shoot on Bannerman's Island, and she went along with it just to please him. Angelica admitted that their relationship wasn't perfect, with most of their conflict stemming from Vincent's sexual desires. Still, she said she'd been committed to working things out as she envisioned a future together and wanted to have his children. Despite these revelations, Angelica didn't repeat what she had allegedly told Detective De Quarto on Bannerman's Island. He prodded further, asking, "What could you have done physically that caused Vincent to drown? Let's see if you remember what you told me." Angelica replied, "No." De Quarta reminded her, "You said by taking the plug out of the kayak and taking the paddle away from him. Does that sound correct?" "Yeah," Angelica agreed, before adding, "But I didn't intend to have it happen that way." She said that she had removed Vincent's drain plug well before the trip, sometime during the off-season in winter, so that her cat could play with it. Afterward, she put it either in a drawer in Vincent's apartment or in the car. Angelica claimed that Vincent knew the plug wasn't in his kayak when they headed for Bannerman's Island and that he wasn't bothered by its absence. She maintained that she didn't remove the plug with any intention of causing harm, emphasizing, "I didn't want to kill Vincent or anything like that." Detective De Quarto pressed Angelica about the comments she had made on Bannerman's Island about wanting Vincent gone. "Isn't that what you said?" he asked. "I did," Angelica agreed. De Quarto asked if she had taken the plug out as a means to escape her troubled relationship. Angelica admitted that it could be viewed that way, but she said it wasn't her intention. Dubious of her innocent act, De Quarto asked, "When you watched Vincent in the water, was a part of you saying, 'My worries are gone now and I'm free'? And were you almost..." "Euphoric," Angelica interrupted casually, finishing his sentence. She nodded, saying she felt euphoric watching Vincent struggle in the river because she knew he was going to be gone. She added that she still felt euphoric about it over a week later. However, within an hour of making these admissions, Angelica maintained that she had done everything she could to save Vincent. "I didn't just watch him drown," she asserted. "I tried to do something about it." She also denied having removed the safety ring from Vincent's paddle, even though an examination of the paddle confirmed that the safety ring was indeed missing, just like Angelica had said. "That's a little different from what you told me earlier, though," Detective De Quarto pointed out to her. Why do you keep changing what you were saying?" Angelica apologized, saying, "I'm just tired." When asked what she wanted that day out on the Hudson River, Angelica repeated that she wanted to be free. She kept saying she wanted Vincent gone, but maintained that she didn't kill him. She described feeling as though she had been torn in two by an angel and a demon as she watched him struggle in the water. "What was the demon side saying?" the detective asked. "It's not a good side," Angelica sighed. "You don't want to see that side of me. Nobody does. Now, that side was telling me, 'This is really, like, gonna happen. Just let it.' But the good side was saying, 'Save him. Save him. You can do it. You can do it. You're strong.'" When asked why the demon side won, Angelica responded matter-of-factly, "Because of the way Vincent treated me, you know." As for whether the way she acted was a means to get back at Vincent, Angelica said, "Kind of, yeah." The interview stretched into the night with breaks interspersed throughout. During these pauses, Angelica appeared to show complete indifference and a lack of concern for her predicament. She practiced yoga, smoked cigarettes, meditated, ate pizza, and even played hopscotch. She also drew a picture of a palm-fringed island alongside the word "free". When the interview recommenced, she kept talking about going home to feed her cat. As the hours dragged on, Angelica began making some bizarre remarks. She said that she had sensed that Vincent would die that day because she was, quote, in tune with the other side. She also said she was glad that she had fallen into the water too, because she wanted to feel what Vincent had felt. When the questioning continued with Detective DeQuarto's partner, Angelica remarked, "I don't want to admit that I killed Vincent." The detective responded, "Okay, I understand that, but you did. The reality is, you took that plug out because you wanted to kill him. You wanted him to be dead. You wanted to be free." Angelica replied, "I took it out before, a long time ago." The detective agreed, adding, "Because you wanted him to die." Angelica nodded, "Yes, at some point, yes." The detective asked point blank, "You killed Vinny, right?" "You're the one telling me," Angelica replied flatly. "No," the detective interjected, "I'm asking you the question." "You want me to admit it?" Angelica asked. The detective replied that he just wanted Angelica to tell the truth. "I am telling you the truth," she asserted. As the detective continued to pry, Angelica's frustrations grew and her answers became heated. "All right, I'll give you your fucking statement," she snapped. "I wanted him dead and now he's gone, and I'm okay with it. I am okay with that." Case File will be back shortly. Thank you for supporting us by listening to this episode's sponsors. Thank you for listening to this episode's ads. By supporting our sponsors, you support Case File to continue to deliver quality content. After 11 hours of intense questioning, Angelica Gruswold had admitted to removing the drain plug from Vincent Villafort's kayak and wanting him to die, but she'd stopped short of making an outright confession to his murder. Even though Vincent's body was still missing, investigators felt satisfied that Angelica had intentionally caused his death. They charged her with second-degree murder as well as second-degree manslaughter. If found guilty, she faced a possible 25 years to life in prison. The charges sparked mixed reactions among those who knew Angelica and Vincent. Some believed there was no way Angelica could have caused Vincent any harm, with one friend remarking, "Vincent always had his arm around her. They were lovey-dovey. I always like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I think Vincent would want everyone to give Angelica the benefit of the doubt. He really did love her." A fellow volunteer on Bannerman's Island described Angelica as always seeming happy and in love with Vincent, noting that she never spoke negatively about him. Most people knew Angelica to be kind-hearted, bright, and mild-mannered, not a cold-blooded killer. The couple's neighbours had never even heard them argue. However, an ex-boyfriend of Angelica's painted a very different picture. He claimed that Angelica had a violent streak when she didn't get her way, describing her behaviour as a way of reacting when she feels threatened. When they broke up, he said Angelica lay behind his car to prevent him from leaving with their pet cat, even though she didn't have a place to house it. She threatened to break into the house to retrieve the cat until he relented and handed it over. After separating from her second husband, Angelica reportedly took many of his belongings, only returning them after a court order forced her to do so. Although Vincent's mother, Marianne, was shocked to learn about the charges against Angelica, it explained her callous behaviour in the aftermath of Vincent's disappearance. Marianne told the TV show 48 Hours, "I do not believe that this was an accident. I was devastated that Angelica would do that to my son, who was so good to her." Many Hudson River locals thought the case was suspicious from the start, with one telling the Washington Post, "It didn't add up. From day one, I thought it had to be a murder myself. I really did." The bizarre case became a media sensation, with Angelica Griswold dubbed the kayak killer. The apparent financial motive for the killing, combined with scandalous rumours about the couple's sex life, fueled dramatic and provocative headlines. Angelica's innocent, youthful looks and gentle nature contrasted sharply with the unapologetically insensitive way she spoke about Vincent, turning her into a highly contentious figure. Her behaviour continued to mystify those around her, with a prison officer noting that despite her predicament, she often appeared almost cheerful. In the court of public opinion, Vincent was seen as a likable everyman, while Angelica was painted as a manipulative and calculating foreign vixen. Angelica denied ever making a confession to Detective Donald DeQuarto on Bannerman's Island and claimed that she was being wrongfully accused, insisting, "I didn't kill Vincent. I loved him. I'm not a killer. I'm a good person." She ultimately pleaded not guilty to the charges against her. The judge agreed with the prosecution that Angelica posed a flight risk and set her bail at $3 million in cash or a $9 million bond. Unable to pay, Angelica remained in custody awaiting her trial, which was scheduled for 2017, nearly 2 years after Vincent disappeared. In the meantime, investigators continued to build their case against her. A search of Angelica's car uncovered the drain plug from Vincent's kayak and the safety ring from his paddle. Investigators conducted repeated tests to determine whether Vincent's kayak could have sunk with the drain plug missing. Their results showed that the small hole consistently allowed water to enter the vessel, and it would only take 7 to 10 minutes for the kayak to sink. They also tested the use of a paddle without a safety ring and confirmed that it would have been extremely difficult to paddle without it, even in calm waters. Data from Angelica's 911 call was compared to her version of events, with investigators believing that the call was placed approximately 15 minutes after Vincent's kayak had already sunk. Her personal diary also revealed entries venting about Vincent's sexual demands and how they made her wish he was dead. With all this in mind, investigators were convinced that Angelica had coaxed Vincent into kayaking to Bannerman's Island under the false pretense of a sexy photo shoot. Everything from sabotaging his paddle and kayak to plying him with alcohol as a storm approached, to knowing he wouldn't be wearing a life jacket or any other protective gear, was part of Angelica's premeditated plan to kill Vincent while making it look like an accident. When Vincent inevitably capsized, investigators believed that Angelica snatched his paddle away to prevent him from using it to stay afloat. She watched as Vincent perished, then called 911, feigning panic to make it appear as though he was still alive. It wasn't until the rescue boat neared that Angelica threw herself into the water, reinforcing her story that the whole incident had been a tragic accident, one she had barely survived herself. In the eyes of detectives, Angelica was a sociopath. From behind bars, Angelica fielded interviews in which she maintained her calm, soft-spoken demeanour. She continued to deny any involvement in Vincent's death, insisting, "Of course I didn't do it. He was the love of my life." She acknowledged the inconsistencies in her story, but attributed them to a crazy time in her life. From Angelica's perspective, her actions didn't align with the prosecution's narrative. Before she and Vincent left Bannerman's Island, she had texted a friend who lived across the river to let them know they were about to depart. The friend and her husband used a telescope and saw Angelica dancing on the dock as Vincent took her photo. The friend texted Angelica to let her know that they could see her, and Angelica waved back. If Angelica had been planning to murder Vincent straight after this, why would she have so openly set herself up with potential witnesses? Angelica's defense attorney, Richard Portale, argued that investigators had either ignored or distorted key facts to fit their narrative. In an interview with Crime Watch Daily, Portale contended that detectives had already decided on Angelica's guilt before gathering any solid evidence to support it. He claimed that the detectives had fabricated the entire story about Angelica's so-called confession on Bannerman's Island. As Portale pointed out, if Angelica had truly confessed, why didn't the police arrest her immediately? And why didn't they confront her outright with the confession during her lengthy recorded interview at the police barracks? Portale called the detectives a pack of wolves who emotionally beat Angelica up in an attempt to extract a recorded confession. He highlighted comments made by Detective Donald DeQuarto in which he tried to reconcile discrepancies between Angelica's version of events and the alleged island confession. Over the 11-hour interview, Angelica still couldn't replicate her supposed confession, even after repeated prompting. Richard Portale also argued that the integrity of Angelica's police interview was flawed due to a significant language barrier. Given that English was not Angelica's first language, she was led to believe she was communicating effectively when, in fact, she wasn't. Portale said that Angelica wanted to appear confident, so she often responded affirmatively to questions, even when she didn't fully understand them. About 7 hours into the interview, she asked what Miranda rights were, indicating that she hadn't fully understood them when they were initially read to her. Furthermore, Angelica entered the interview unaware that she was a suspect. As a result, she didn't request legal counsel beforehand. Having grown up around police with a father who was an officer in Latvia, she inherently trusted law enforcement. She later admitted to Well magazine, "That was my fault. I was naive. Very naive." At the start of the interview, detectives told Angelica that the process was therapy, and they continuously reassured her that honesty would lead to leniency and no judgment. This encouraged her to speak openly about her conflicting feelings toward Vincent, unaware that her words could be used against her. It was only after hours of continuously answering the same questions that Angelica snapped in frustration and harshly stated that she was glad Vincent was dead. Richard Portale likened it to the kind of language seen in gangster movies, where a character might admit to wanting someone dead without being directly responsible for their death. "That's not a confession," he stated. Former detective and false confession expert Jim Trainham reviewed Angelica Gruswold's police interview for the investigative television show 48 Hours. He explained that interrogators often manipulate suspects into believing it's in their best interest to give the desired answers, saying, "Anyone can fall victim to it." Trainham noted that the interview served as a cautionary example for police officers on how not to conduct interrogations. He explained that the detectives had used leading questions to pressure Angelica into agreeing that Vincent didn't love her, and that she had removed the kayak plug to get back at him, when she had never made such claims herself. While she accepted the detective's theory that the missing drain plug might have caused Vincent's kayak to sink, she never admitted to removing it for that purpose. Jim Trainum also believed that the detectives had misinterpreted Angelica's words. When she said she wanted Vincent gone, she meant out of her life. Her desire to be free referred to the end of their troubled relationship. Even if she felt liberated by his death, it didn't mean she'd plotted his murder. The detectives also misunderstood the physical evidence, repeatedly stating the drain plug hole was beneath the kayak, despite Angelica correcting them. Trainum agreed with Angelica's attorney that her most damaging comments were made when she was worn down and desperate to end the interrogation. When Angelica's repeated requests to go home and feed her cat were denied, Trainum believed that she accepted the police's narrative just to escape. He concluded, "This is a non-crime. This is an accident the police turned into a criminal offence because of their gut feeling." Another expert on false confessions explained to Elle magazine that confessions tend to become false in longer interrogations, particularly those lasting over 8 hours. He noted that people who falsely confess to crimes are not stupid, but are often misled into believing their confession won't have serious consequences. ABC News chief legal analyst Dan Abrams described the case as tricky because the key piece of evidence was Angelica's own words, and her own words are not entirely clear. He pointed out that she doesn't come out and say, "I did it." One veteran homicide investigator praised the detectives for doing what he perceived to be an excellent job of the interrogation, as it resulted in some incriminating comments from Angelica. However, he also stated, "But is it a confession? No." Angelica was subject to a psychological evaluation shortly after her arrest, with the forensic psychologist concluding that she suffered from paranoid ideation and hypomanic trends. Hypomania is a milder form of the manic episodes experienced by people with bipolar disorder, and it can be triggered by traumatic events. The forensic psychologist found Angelica to be impulsive and lacking in judgment, traits commonly seen in individuals who tend to, quote, "run off at the mouth." In the psychologist's view, her poor judgment likely played a role during her interrogation, while he also identified her to have several psychological traits that were linked to false confessions. The psychologist determined that Angelica was not sadistic, cruel, or vindictive, but had learned to numb herself emotionally after having had traumatic experiences with other people. This could also help explain her strangely upbeat conduct after Vincent's disappearance, with the psychologist describing her behaviour as being overactive, energetic, and self-dramatising. Defence attorney Richard Portale emphasised this behaviour also came down to cultural differences. He said, "Everyone criticised Angelica for doing a cartwheel, assuming if she's happy, she must have killed Vincent. But in Latvia, open grieving isn't an option. You don't cry in public." Angelica detailed her upbringing in an interview with Elle magazine, saying, "Women are not meant to be seen crying or as weak or broken." While she was devastated about losing Vincent, she didn't feel comfortable showing emotions publicly. "I was in shock," she explained. "I was in denial. I much rather put on a happy face." As for her claim of feeling euphoric after Vincent's death, Angelica told Elle that she had read a book on grief which suggested that experiencing euphoric feelings after the death of a loved one was normal. Had this little-known fact been more widely understood, she believed it might have shifted public perception of her. One of the key elements of the prosecution's case against Angelica was the missing drain plug, which they claimed Angelica removed to intentionally sink Vincent's kayak. But Richard Portale pointed out that Vincent often kayaked without the plug in order to secure the kayak to his car. Surveillance footage from traffic cameras on the afternoon that Vincent and Angelica drove to Plum Point Park showed Vincent's kayak strapped to the roof of his car through the drain plug hole. Portale argued that the missing drain plug was a red herring and it hadn't even contributed to Vincent's death. He explained, "When waves hit the kayak, they crash into the cockpit, not the drain plug hole. Water wouldn't enter it significantly enough to submerge the kayak." To test the theory, ABC's 2020 program, Mystery on the Hudson, as well as 48 Hours program, Death on the Hudson, both carried out their own recreations. In both programs, experts found that even in choppy waters, only a small amount of water entered the kayak through the drain plug hole, nowhere near enough to sink the vessel. The majority of the water entered through the cockpit, just like Angelica claimed had happened to Vincent. 48 Hours also conducted a test where the cockpit was completely sealed, leaving only the drain plug hole open. In this scenario, less than an ounce of water, not even the size of a shot glass, entered the kayak. Tests were also done to see how effectively a person could kayak using a paddle that was missing one of its safety rings. It turned out to be no trouble at all. The prosecution also claimed that Angelica had taken the paddle from Vincent so he couldn't use it to keep himself afloat. Testing conducted by 48 Hours concluded that a paddle alone wasn't enough to keep a fully grown man afloat anyway. In all the testing conducted by various media outlets and news programs, none were able to replicate the results claimed by the case investigators. Angelica agreed to an interview for the 2020 segment. When asked why she chose to speak publicly, she stated, "I just needed a chance to let people know I'm innocent. I'm being accused of murder, which I'm not capable of doing." She explained that her comments about wanting to be free of Vincent related to the lifestyle they were living, not Vincent himself. In another interview with News 12, Angelica said that her incriminating diary entries about wanting Vincent dead were outdated and written in anger during a difficult time. "I didn't really mean it," she said. "I was very much in love with Vincent and would never have hurt him." Richard Portale dismissed the alleged motive of Vincent's life insurance policy, arguing it didn't align with Angelica's character, saying, "She's not someone who cares about money. She's a simple girl from a simple country, more interested in flowers, photographs, and sunsets than in financial gain." Portale asserted that Vincent's death was an accident caused by a combination of factors, including his own failure to respect the dangers of the water. After all, Vincent had entered the tumultuous river after drinking a few beers, without a life jacket, wetsuit, spray skirt, or drain plug. In Portale's opinion, the idea that Angelica had meticulously planned the killing was absurd. She had no control over the weather, the river conditions, or Vincent's decisions and actions that day. Referring to Vincent as the captain of his own ship, Portale told 2020, "I'm not here to blame Mr. Villefort for his own death, but Ms. Graswold is not his mother. He's a grown man, and that's really his responsibility." On Saturday, May 23, 2015, 34 days after Vincent Villefort's disappearance, a recreational boater spotted Vincent's body floating face down in the Hudson River, about a mile downstream from Bannerman's Island. He hadn't drifted far from where his kayak had capsized. The discovery brought bittersweet relief to Vincent's loved ones. "I was both sad and happy," his mother Mary Ann told 48 Hours. "Sad that there was no hope, and happy that at least we found him and could bring him home." As Vincent's body underwent an autopsy, Richard Portale expressed confidence that the findings wouldn't harm Angelica's case. He expected the cause of Vincent's death would be classified as accidental drowning or hypothermia with alcohol as a factor, which would lead to the charges against Angelica being dropped. The autopsy confirmed Vincent's cause of death as drowning, with a blood alcohol concentration of 0.06, indicating early stage intoxication. However, the medical examiner ultimately ruled Vincent's death a homicide, stating it was caused by a kayak drain plug intentionally removed by another. The result left many stunned. For those who believed Vincent's death was an accident, the autopsy failed to provide crucial evidence of foul play. Richard Portale argued that the findings were based on statements from New York State Police and didn't reflect the tests, expert opinions, or evidence at hand. He questioned how the medical examiner could have used the word intentionally in connection with the missing drain plug. "Did she find that under a microscope?" he asked, before adding, "In New York, a medical examiner properly relies on medical evidence. They can consider other factors, but the issue of intent is for the jury to decide." While the autopsy's findings strengthened the prosecution's case for murder, Angelica's legal team prepared their false confession defense. Then, just weeks before her trial, Angelica made a stunning decision. She tearfully pleaded guilty to a lesser felony charge of criminally negligent homicide. As part of the plea deal, she admitted to engaging in blameworthy conduct so serious that it contributed to a substantial and unjustifiable risk of Vincent's death. This included removing the drain plug from Vincent's kayak, knowing the safety ring was missing from his paddle, and being aware of the hazardous weather conditions. She also knew that Vincent wasn't wearing a life vest or wetsuit, had been drinking, and that the cold, treacherous waters of the Hudson River posed a significant danger. Angelica conceded that, with this knowledge, she should have acted differently to prevent harm and save Vincent's life. Explaining how they reached the plea deal, the district attorney said that proving intentional murder would have been challenging in court, given the lack of eyewitnesses and limited physical evidence. The case relied heavily on Angelica's alleged confession on Bannerman's Island and her 11-hour recorded interview, but none of her vacillating statements constituted a direct confession for intentional murder. Due to the significant amount of time that had passed since her arrest, the opportunity to have Angelica evaluated by the prosecution's psychiatric experts, who could have potentially countered claims that she had made a false confession, was no longer feasible. The plea deal ultimately removed the uncertainty of a lengthy trial in which Angelica could escape conviction and spared Vincent's family from further emotional distress. At Angelica's sentencing, the judge made it clear the court didn't accept her version of events and believed she acted maliciously. "You could have walked out on Vincent if you were unhappy, instead of whatever it was in your mind that led to removing the plug and taking other actions." The judge emphasized that it was ultimately Angelica's failure to assist Vincent when he was struggling in the water that led to his death. "You certainly have a lack of understanding of other people's feelings," he said, noting Angelica's excessive need for admiration and pointing to her exaggerated feelings of self-worth. He characterized Vincent as an unnecessary victim of Angelica's mindset, suggesting that her failure to help him was driven by her own self-centered motivations. Angelica Gruswald was sentenced to 16 to 48 months in prison, the maximum for criminally negligent homicide. The outcome was criticized in the media, with many viewing the kayak killer as receiving little more than a slap on the wrist. Vincent's mother, Mary Ann, was equally dissatisfied, stating, 4 years for taking someone's life. No way. My son was a good man, and everyone loved him. In a statement read by her legal counsel outside the courthouse, Angelica said, I loved Vince very much and miss him terribly. I don't believe I was treated fairly. The entire process was one-sided and unjust. I've learned you're not innocent until proven guilty. I'm not a murderer. I've said that from the beginning. If I could bring Vince back, I would. With time served, Angelica was released on parole in December 2017 after spending 32 months in prison. In an interview with 2020, she explained that she took the plea deal to avoid a life sentence for a crime she didn't commit. Despite her plea, Angelica said she didn't feel guilty. I have to let it go, she said. I can't live with that all the time. They can say whatever they want. I know the truth, and God knows the truth. Angelica intended to use Vincent's life insurance payout to pay for her legal fees, but Vincent's family filed a wrongful death lawsuit against her to prevent her from collecting the money. The case was settled confidentially. Vincent's family maintained their belief that Angelica was responsible for his death, with his mother, Mary Ann, vowing never to see her again. Vincent's sister said, When I think of my brother's last moments, I imagine him struggling to survive in the freezing cold, confused, and unable to understand why the woman who said she loved him did nothing to help. Although Vincent's family felt that justice hadn't been served, they vowed to keep Vincent's spirit alive by living their lives with the same boundless joy that he did. Vincent's sister said, The world has lost a truly amazing person, and we can never get him back. While public opinion remains divided over whether Vincent's death was an accident or intentional, Angelica told Elle magazine that, through her growing faith, she no longer cares what others think. Bottom line, I'm the only living person who's still here, and I'm the only one who knows, she said. Vincent loved me. I loved him. He had said he would die for me if need be, and I feel like he did, so I could live. He saved me, in a way. Angelica explained that although she was willing to drown to save Vincent, it was he who urged her to call 911. The dispatcher had then instructed Angelica to paddle toward the shore where an emergency vehicle had just arrived, instead of continuing her efforts to rescue Vincent and risk her own life. I've been in these situations on the Hudson before where it was dangerous, and I always got out of it. So I felt like that night I could too, she said. You know how you get careless? I was careless. So was he. We both were. It cost him. It cost him his life. Angelica's supporters have compared her case to that of Amanda Knox, who was accused of murdering Meredith Kircher, as detailed in episode 270 of Case File. While Vincent's case lacked the same gruesome sexualized violence as Meredith's, both involved women accused of murder who were heavily scrutinized and judged based on their unconventional emotional responses, body language, personality traits, and cultural differences. Elle magazine explored why such cases capture public attention, with their article stating, "When women stand accused in the death of a loved one, stereotypes about how they should act intervene. Alleged female criminals receive more gender-based media coverage than their male counterparts, fueling the news cycle, poisoning public opinion, and making it harder to find impartial juries. As a result, women are often judged for two crimes, whether they committed the alleged crime and whether they failed in their traditional caregiving role." Since Vincent's death, Angelica has largely kept a low profile, speaking about the aftermath of the controversial case in only a few interviews. She says that she continues to kayak and has even returned to Bannerman's Island, describing it as a way of confronting her fear and completing the circle. In August 2015, 4 months after Vincent Villafor's death, 32-year-old photographer and model Ian Jones and his 22-year-old girlfriend Tali Lennox Fruchtman attended a night-long birthday party at a Hudson River waterfront mansion. The couple, who had been together for 2 years and considered each other their perfect match, were planning to wed. The morning after the party, they decided to go for a romantic kayak trip together. The couple climbed into a two-seater kayak and headed toward a distant lighthouse. Ian, a strong swimmer with experience in kayaking, considered the trip low risk. It was summertime, the water was calm, and Ian was doing all the paddling. Neither he nor Tali wore life jackets. During their journey, the kayak was caught in a current in the middle of the river and capsized. Neither Ian nor Tali fully understood the deceptive danger of the river. The current, moving at 4 miles per hour, swept Ian away. 2 days later, his body was found near the Poughkeepsie Yacht Club. Tali, who was picked up by a passing boat, later said that Ian died trying to save her. She was an emotional wreck after the experience, posting a heartfelt tribute on social media. "My heart is shattered. My best friend, my soulmate, my partner in crime and creativity, the love and light of my life, is no longer with me." Ian Jones's death was immediately considered a tragic accident. No foul play was suspected, and the matter wasn't investigated further by police. Meanwhile, Angelica Graswold remained in prison, awaiting trial for the murder of Vincent Villafor.